I'm Redbeard. This episode of In the Studio on the anniversary of 10 years after his album A Space in Time is dedicated to Alvin Lee, who passed away in March 2013.
Space and Time was the space and time to write some good songs. I think that's what made the difference. Because Love Changed the World came out of that one, which wasn't a typical 10 years after song, but I always think it's a good song. It's about the only time I've ever made even close to a political comment in my life. I've always avoided things like that. I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do, so I'll leave it up to you. And if you listen very closely on the last line, it says, and the best of luck.
Hello, this is Leo Lyons from 10 Years After.
Hi, this is Alvin Lee, and you're in the studio with 10 Years After. Hey, Redbeard.
Hi, Alvin. Rock and roll as a popular art form is only approaching middle age, but in that short time, the music has spun off in an incredible variety of directions, growing and evolving at breathtaking speeds, the most volatile cultural phenomenon this world has ever seen. At every point along the way, there have been bands whose music went back to the roots, to the blues and the rockabilly from which it all came. The late 60s and early 70s. Looking back then wasn't quite so fashionable. What mattered then was the present and the future. No one seemed to care much about the past. But there were a few exceptions. Bands who cherished the roots of rock and roll, who celebrated the old music even as they were creating something new. They were the last great survivors of the British blues revival. People like John Mayall, Long John Baldry, and the original Fleetwood Mac when it was a blues band. Then there was 10 Years After. The fiery passion for unadorned rock and roll in that band sent the crowd at Woodstock reeling. The guitarist with fire in his fingers that August night was Alvin Lee. There was nothing fancy about the music they played, nothing pretentious. In fact, it was not much different from the music that 10 Years After had played for years in their hometown of Nottingham, England, as Alvin Lee and then bass player Leo Lyons recall in the studio.
It was pretty rough in those days. I remember we used to do a lot of pub gigs, and Saturday nights we usually had to end up fighting our way out of the pubs.
And sometimes right. The audience joined in with us.
You know, the girls would sit there smiling at the band and we'd smile back, and the boyfriends would want to beat us up. It was that kind of environment, and Nottingham's always been a good place to get out of.
Well, the name came, and then the explanation as to how we got the name came afterwards. I'm still trying to think of the best explanation. But the circle of life, like for those people that want to read something into it, the number 10. 10 years after Elvis Presley, the birth of rock and roll. Where I actually saw the name was on a Radio Times magazine, which the headline was 10 Years After, and I read the article. It was about 10 years after conscription had ceased in the UK and what people were doing after that. So that was the truth, and that was one of several names, and that was the band and Chris Wright, our manager at the time, decided that was the one that everyone went for.
Yeah, people used to say 10 years after what? We'd say 10 years after anything we can get.
Thank you.
was Muddy Waters' version. We just, it was one of the blues repertoire that we always liked. And we were actually jamming in the dressing room just before a gig. And we came up with the fast version with that riff. Had we been a little more business-minded, we could have just changed a few words and made it our own song, because it's not much like the original song. It was just a little jam we had in the dressing room, based very roughly on the Muddy Waters version of Good Morning Little Schoolgirl.
That's 10 years after, with their version of Sonny Boy Williamson's Good Morning Little Schoolgirl from the 1969 album called Shh. That's what it's called. Guitarist singer Alvin Lee and bass player Leo Lyons, both from Nottingham, England, started playing blues together in 1964. In 1967, they hooked up with keyboard player Chick Churchill and drummer Rick Lee, no relation to Alvin, and 10 years after was formed. From day one, the band's music had a strong blues base, which is not surprising when you consider Alvin Lee's background.
I had a strange environment for an English guy growing up. My father used to collect chain gang songs and prison work songs, and that was kind of always playing around the house since I remember, you know, kind of, take this hammer, wah, and all that, you know. But originally, I mean, I used to love the blues. I met Big Bill Brunsey when I was 13 years old, which was quite an inspiration. I used to love John Lee Hooker, still do, Muddy Waters, all those guys. My dad had all the 78s. Years later, John Mayall kind of hit big in England and kind of fathered the blues boom. And suddenly it was cool to do blues. You know, we used to do it maybe the last set of three at 1 o'clock in the morning, just when there's about four people left in a club. We used to play the blues and a bit of jazz. But it was a very minority thing. But after John Mayall kind of came out, suddenly the blues was cool, and I had this great repertoire of all these old blues songs that I knew, and we just slot them into the set there. We very quickly became a blues band. In fact, we nearly called ourselves the Blues Yard, but we figured it was wrong to tie ourselves down to one style of music in the name.
Word about 10 years after, and particularly Alvin Lee's guitar playing, spread quickly in England, and by the end of 1967, they had their first album out.
We were doing pretty good on the club circuit in London. We were playing residency at the Marquee Friday nights, which is a pretty big deal. Decca London approached us and said, you know, you're doing real good and we'd like you to be one of the first bands to make an album before making a single. Because in those days you had to make a single and get a reasonable amount of success before you could make an album. And we were termed underground in those days, you know, didn't make singles. And we just wanted to make an album, and they actually offered us a chance to make an album. Unknown to the guy that did that, we'd done an audition for the same label 4 weeks before and failed. So we got the turndown letter, and then 2 days later, we got an offer from them from another guy saying, we want you on the label.
10 years after, released a live album in 1968, but were hardly known in the U.S. when their Shh album was released here in 1969. They came to America to play and to promote the new release. And one of their bookings was on a hog farm in upstate New York. Rarely can a band point to one night that changed the course of their career, but in the case of 10 Years After, there was indeed such a night when they played the Woodstock Festival, August 17, 1969, before 350,000 people. Here's Alvin Lee.
It wasn't the performance at Woodstock Festival. I mean, we did the festival and then carried on for a year just the same. We were doing quite well. A lot of people say Woodstock made the band, but we were doing good before Woodstock. We did the Woodstock Festival, and it wasn't until the movie came out that made all the difference. You know, if you do it, when you get onto celluloid, it makes things larger than life. And the minute the movie came out, we went out of the 4,000 to 5,000 seater theaters and the kind of tea parties and those kind of gigs into the arenas. And a lot of people, as I say, they say Woodstock made 10 Years After, but that's a fallacy. We were doing real good before then. It just kind of shifted us up a few notches.
I love that way you walk. How, how. shoot you right now. Knock you off your feet. Whoa, oh, baby. I got a crazy.
Bell one more time. Oh, you the stomp. You the stomp. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, baby. Oh, baby, baby, baby. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Do that, baby, I'll do that one more time. I've gone home. Yeah, oh, oh baby, I've gone home. I go home. Oh baby, look out, baby, I'm coming to get you one more time.
I go home. I go home.
The August 1969 Woodstock Festival and film, which has been fabulously restored now with surround sound on DVD. That's I'm Going Home. Up next, Alvin Lee and Leo Lyon, some 10 years after, discuss how the Woodstock movie made Alvin Lee a marked man, like a gunfighter in the Old West. I'm Redbeard. This episode of In the Studio, 10 years after his album A Space and Time, is dedicated to Alvin Lee, who passed away in March 2013. By the time the Woodstock film, containing the electrifying performance by 10 years after, made the rounds of theaters, midnight movies, drive-ins, and college campuses, 10 years after had rushed out three more studio albums, including the critically regarded 1970 album Cricklewood Green. But much of their reputation then and even now centered on the sheer speed of Alvin Lee's guitar playing, an aspect which he contends was blown way out of proportion.
I think the reason people picked up on it being fast was because of the light and shade. If you play just flat out fast, it doesn't impress anybody. It just turns into a noise. And the only, you know, the thing is, if you use light and shade, you play slow and then you fire a few rocket riffs off. People go, wow, that was fast. But if you just shoot fast straight from the beginning, you know, you run out of licks in the first 10 minutes. Now, I used to get annoyed because people used to say, oh, this kid can only just flash fast player. He's got no taste, no feel, just lots of notes. And that used to annoy the hell out of me at the time. But occasionally I'd turn up to a gig and it would say, the fastest guitarist in the West. And that did annoy me because I knew I wasn't and I didn't even propose to be. And I thought if people were writing that about me, there's a lot of people out there, like particularly guitarists, who'd say, oh no, he isn't. We'll be right back.
written by Alvin Lee, that's Love Like a Man by 10 Years After from 1970's Cricklewood Green album. By 1971, 10 Years After was attempting to move away from the blues boogie rock of its early albums. Alvin Lee explains.
It was no challenge for me to write a rock and roll song like that. I've only noticed since then. I think you tend to ignore what you do best because it comes easy to you. It was very easy for me to sit down and bang off a three-chord rock and roll tune. And I kind of was looking for more of a challenge in the songwriting. I was kind of admiring Paul Simon's songs and things like that. So probably I was trying to go a little more that way rather than do what came easiest to me. Since then, I've probably decided that what comes easiest to me is what is natural and what is best.
After proving that a leopard can't change its spots, that rave up is included on an otherwise more restrained and polished 1971 album called A Space in Time. By far 10 Years After's most successful album, it contained their only top 40 hit, I'd Love to Change the World. Here's the composer, Alvin Lee.
I'll tell you what was amazingly different. The kind of reason for the title Space in Time was that was the first album we'd made since the very first one, where we'd had any period off the road and time to write the songs. And I was kind of campaigning for like 6 months off because I was getting, you know, I think on Cricklewood Green there was a song called Working on the Road where I was complaining about working too much. I finally got, I think it was about 4 months in the end, some compromise, and I managed to have time to sit with acoustic guitar and write some songs in the country. And the space in time was the space and time to write some good songs. I think that's what made the difference. Because Love to Change the World came out of that one, which wasn't a typical 10 Years After song, but I always think it's a good song. It's about the only time I've ever made even close to a political comment in my life. I've always avoided things like that. I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do, so I'll leave it up to you. And if you listen very closely on the last line, it says, and the best of luck. Put your headphones on.
Dykes and ferries, tell me where is sanity? Tax the rich, feed the poor, tell there are no rich no more. I don't know what to do. nation keeps on bleeding, nation bleeding, still more bleeding. Life is funny, skies are sunny, bees make honey.
September 1971's A Space in Time album. That's 10 years after with I'd Love to Change the World. Up next, Alvin Lee and Leo Lyons look back on fate and luck as factors in a fascinating conversation about stardom in the studio. I'm Redbeard. This episode of In the Studio, 10 years after his album A Space in Time, is dedicated to Alvin Lee, who passed away in March 2013.
Hello, this is Leo Lyons from 10 Years After.
Hi, this is Alvin Lee, and you're in the studio with 10 Years After. Hey, Redbeard.
Hey, Alvin. Although the reputation of 10 Years After was usually based on Alvin Lee's blistering guitar licks, it would be unfair to think that that's all there is to the band. With 1971's album A Space in Time, Alvin Lee and Leo Lyons claim that a lot of experimenting was going on.
You know, we didn't just do our formula. We'd do a bit of country, we'd do a bit of funky stuff. We'd do a bit of acid stuff, you know, the whole thing. We'd try anything. And I think one of the liner notes at the time said, this isn't the music of 10 years after, it's the music 10 years after are trying or experimenting with at the moment. It wasn't a statement as much as an experiment.
In other words, we had no plans. The plan was,
let's bluff it.
Let's bluff it, yeah.
I used to write songs on the way to the studio in the taxi, you know, pretend I'd had it written for about 3 months. Get a bit of credibility out of it.
One day, boy, gone see me, baby. Gone see me, baby. Come down. Gone see the governor.
lead-off jam to September 1971's A Space in Time album. That's called One of These Days by 10 Years After. Their Woodstock performance and appearance in the film propelled 10 Years After to a period of early 70s popularity, at least for a while. But by 1974, Alvin Lee grew frustrated, stereotyped by his guitar slinger reputation. He embarked on solo projects. In 1989, they even regrouped with the original members for a short stint and a new album. Even then, the ghost of Woodstock still haunted them, but Alvin Lee considers it a friendly one.
It's true, but it's mainly down to luck. I mean, we just doing what we do best and rocking out. We didn't actually choose the song. I mean, we did an hour and a half set at Woodstock, and I've often wondered, had they picked a song like I Can't Keep From Crying and used that in the movie, it would have made a whole different perspective on the band. But I think from it being Going Home, it was a rock out boogie set. And it's still the same today. It's what people like. You know, if you rockers and people that like rock and roll music, they like to boogie down. It's unpretentious. It's straight ahead rock and roll. It just seemed to capture everybody. I think they just like the energy, and that's what it's always been about.
We did some rock and roll and dancing.
Scream.
10 years after, with the title song to 1972's Rock and Roll Music to the World. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this.